everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Don't forget to pack the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies for a post-errands pick-me-up. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
Hi, and welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. Last episode, I talked about men cheating on their wives, throwing away their family, and how susceptible rich men are to the idea that they could get away with it. On this episode, I want to talk about divorce ideation I see from women. There was a story in New York Magazine by Emily Gould on how she had considered divorcing her husband. I mean, she was also in the throes of a manic episode and ended up in a mental hospital, but the crux of the piece was that she became obsessed with divorce. The piece is called Should I Leave My Husband? The Lure of Divorce. She writes that she read a bunch of books by divorced women. Here's a quote. In Nora Ephron's Heartburn, As an Aftermath, I found an airtight case for divorce. The husband was the villain and the wife the wronged party, and the inevitable result was splitting up. I felt an echo of this later on when I read Liz Lenz's polemic, The American Ex-Wife, out this month, marketed as a deeply validating manifesto on the gender politics of marriage, bad, and divorce, actually pretty good. The book begins by detailing how Lenz's husband rarely did household chores and hid belongings of hers that he didn't like. For example, a mug that said, write like a motherfucker, in a box in the basement. I didn't want to waste my one wild and precious life telling a grown man where to find the ketchup, Lenz writes. What was compelling about my marriage wasn't its evils or its villains, but its commonplace horror, end quote. I see this a lot, especially in the writing world. Divorce as this amazing thing that women simply must do. I mean, how could you waste your one wild and precious life with a man, right? I mean, look, divorce happens. People fall out of love. People find they'd rather live alone. But this idea that divorce is exciting or divorce is freeing or whatever is a lie. And it's a lie aimed, I think, more at women than at men. Gould writes, quote, I read more books about divorce. I received an early copy of Sarah Manguso's Liars, marketed as a searing novel about being a wife, a mother, and an artist, and how marriage makes liars of us all. In it, John, a creative dilettante, and Jane, a writer, meet and soon decide to marry. Liars describes their marriage from beginning to end, a span of almost 15 years, and is narrated by Jane. The beginning of their relationship is delirious. This is a quote inside the quote. I tried to explain that ferocious hunger and couldn't. It came from somewhere beyond reason, end quote. But the opening of that book also contains a warning. Then I married a man, as women do. My life became archetypical, a drag show of nuclear familyhood. I got enmeshed in a story that had already been told 10 billion times. I felt perversely reassured that I was merely adding another story to the 10 billion. It made it seem like it was less my fault, end quote. Marriage makes liars of us? I don't know about that. Marriage feels very truthful to me, like I get to be really, really myself. And look, if you're in a marriage where you feel like it's a lie, I'm not saying stay in it and that's it and just suffer. But I should note, at the end of that Emily Gould piece, she realizes that she had been in a crazy place and she does stay in her marriage. Maybe if you're feeling like you're living a lie, it's not the marriage that's necessarily the problem. Last episode, I talked about men making mistakes, cheating on their wives, leaving their families during time of change. I think for women, it's in times of extreme routine, where nothing has changed for a long time, where maybe nothing exciting is going on, that they start to daydream of a single future where they finally live their truth. My advice would be, start now. Start living truthfully now, and maybe you'll find that marriage was not the problem. Coming up next, an interview with Glenn Reynolds. Join us after the break.
AI might be the most important new computer technology ever. It's storming every industry, and literally billions of dollars are being invested. So buckle up. The problem is that AI needs a lot of speed and processing power. So how do you compete without costs spiraling out of control? It's time to upgrade to the next generation of the cloud. Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a single platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, and AI needs. OCI has 4 to 8 times the bandwidth of other clouds, offers one consistent price instead of variable regional pricing, and of course, nobody does data better than Oracle. So now you can train your AI models at twice the speed and less than half the cost of other clouds. If you want to do more and spend less like Uber, 8x8, and Databricks Mosaic, take a free test drive of OCI at oracle.com/strategic. That's oracle.com/strategic. Oracle.com/strategic.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Hi, and welcome back to the Carol Markowitz Show on iHeartRadio. My guest today is Glenn Reynolds, law professor, Instapundit founder, fellow New York Post columnist, and writer at instapundit.substack.com. Hi, Glenn. So nice to talk to you.
Hi, great to be here. Great to see you.
I mean, just talking to the blog father is very exciting for me. You know, you had a huge influence in me becoming a writer and just... You know,
I remember your old alarming news blog from like, what, 20 years ago or something?
Yeah.
I started it
in 2002, I think. When did you start Instapundit?
2001.
Right.
Just a month before 9/11.
Right. So I followed 9/11 on your blog. I didn't have a TV. I mean, I didn't even have a desk. I was, heading to graduate school eventually, but I was just living a very meager existence. And I remember sitting on the floor of my apartment in New York and refreshing Instapundit and, you know, just getting all the news that way. Do you miss those blog days?
I mean, certainly not 9/11. I just wrote a history. Actually, Michael Walsh has got a media book coming out, and I wrote a chapter on the early days of the blogosphere for it, which was fun because I really did sort of go back and revisit that and go back and read through my archives and read some of the articles people wrote about it back then. And, you know, the first couple of years from basically 2001 before 9/11 to around the summer of 2003, it was a real innocent and pleasant time in the blogosphere. Mm-hmm. It was so new, and that was exciting. And there was a camaraderie that, I mean, it's hard to imagine now in these polarized times, but between the left and the right bloggers, like it was more important that we were all doing this cool new thing than that we disagreed about politics. And the remnants of 90s netiquette were still around. So I remember Dave Copel and I actually were in the comments at the Daily Coast having a civil and intelligent discussion of assault weapons bans with Daily Coast readers, which, you know, within a couple of years was unimaginable, but was still a thing then.
I remember the moment that I was like, okay, this is all over, this camaraderie and all of that, because it was the same. I mean, in New York, we'd have like blogger parties, and it would be like cooking bloggers and travel bloggers and obviously all the political bloggers and whatever, but it was all like we were doing something together. But I remember that feminist site, Feministe, like I used to comment there fairly regularly. And then one time I commented that trans people should have to disclose that they're trans, like they shouldn't trick people and you know, kind of not just be open about it. Mm-hmm. I thought I was fairly pro-trans, and I thought that that was a normal comment. I got blocked, and I was like, whoa, something has changed here. Like, I used to be like, you know, the quirky conservative in their comment section. that quickly became unacceptable. And I think that that's, you know, has translated to so many other spaces in our world.
Yeah, you really saw it. I mean, if I were going to pick a single dividing line for the blogosphere as a whole, it would probably be, and again, summer of 2003, about the time that Andrew Sullivan sort of took a few weeks off and then came back as a pro-carry blogger. And careful not to just make a big deal about that until after he did his last big fundraising drive.
Right.
But, you know, I felt like that. Everybody suddenly was like, okay, it's 2003. We've pretended to be patriotic for a couple of years, but we got to gear up for the election now. The gloves have to come off, which didn't even work out for him, as it turned out. But it definitely changed the tone of everything. And it's only gotten worse for the most. I mean, actually, it's gotten better in a way. I mean, you know, blogs are now so old. They're like five or six media generations of revolution behind. So, you know, I'm kind of like this quirky museum piece now. I can do and say what I want. The notion that anybody's going to get mad and go after a blogger now, I mean, I guess it could happen, but it's not like it was.
Yeah. How did you escape being canceled? I feel like.
Well, people tried on a number of occasions, but, you know, I'm pretty hard to cancel. I mean, I control my own platform, which is the most important thing. And I have a tenured job at a state school in a red state where I have a lot of friends on the legislature. So, I'm just pretty safe.
Right.
But people have certainly tried on a number of occasions, and it generally hasn't worked out well for them. But, you know, there's just a class of people who just are offended by the idea that somebody's even allowed to say stuff they don't want to hear.
Right. How dare you?
Yeah.
So you don't use Twitter, which is interesting.
No, I mean, I have a Twitter account. Actually, I have a couple of them. I have a personal account I started once in the very earliest days of Twitter because I was doing some media panel and I needed to tweet from it as part of the setup. Mm-hmm. And it still exists. And then I have the Instapundit account. I actually deleted it. I really just, you know, it was just, I was writing this book on social media, the social media upheaval. And I was just researching all the nasty stuff that Twitter does to your mind.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I just honestly, they pissed me off about something. And I just said, screw it, I'm out of here. And I deleted it. And then I forget who it was. Somebody, maybe it was Charles Glasser. Somebody said, you really shouldn't delete your account. You really should just reopen it and not use it so nobody can pretend to be you.
Right.
Well, that makes sense. So I haven't. I think I may have tweeted three or four times in the last several years.
But, you just don't like it? Or what's the...
I never liked it. Honestly, I was a late adopter of Twitter.
Me too.
The ideal setup for me was when somebody, and I didn't even know who it was, had set up an Instapundit Twitter account that did nothing but tweet stuff from the RSS feed on my blog.
Yeah.
And that was great. I was happy with that. And somebody was like, shouldn't you, you know, have it taken down? And I was like, no, I love this. And then it quit working. I just broke. I don't know why. And I had to actually get lawyers to get the handle turned over to me since I had the trademark for Instapundit. Mm-hmm. And then once I got that, I started tweeting, which was a big mistake because it's just, I mean, it has its satisfaction. And it's always fun to really administer a sick burn to somebody. But you can waste a lot of time administering sick burns. And it's the crystal meth of social media in that it's the most addictive, but the least satisfying, you know? Mm. And I was spending a lot of time on it. I was in a bad mood a lot. And ultimately, you know, after I quit, everybody's like, you'll be back in a few months. And I was like, yeah, could be, who knows, you know, but I've never missed it once. It didn't drive any traffic to my site to speak of either. I couldn't tell.
Yeah, that's a big part of, it's a big negative for the site. I think people think that it's a driver of traffic and it's just not. I would rather go viral on Facebook any day of the week, like one of my columns, than on Twitter because, you know, I just don't see
the traffic.
I don't
know why Facebook drives traffic. Although I think it drives a lot less than it used to.
Yeah,
but I think Facebook drive has always driven more traffic than Twitter. And everybody knows that, but I've never heard anybody explain why. My theory is just that people on Twitter are at such a superficial level, they just don't ever click on a link. So,
right.
You know.
Yeah, they see the headline and that's it. Whereas on Facebook, I think like, you know, your grandma sharing it with her friend and like they're actually reading it and clicking it and sharing it and talking about it, which is, you're right. It's not the same kind of reach on Facebook that it used to be, but I always just preferred sort of the real people on Facebook versus the media people on Twitter to like my stuff. It just meant so much more to me. So,
well, I mean, the appeal of Twitter is it was very useful for journalists who had time to kill. You know, I mean, I remember somebody saying Twitter exists because people like me are waiting in line for congressional hearings and have nothing to do but play with our phones for 5 or 10 minutes, you know. And I think there's something to that, but that doesn't
or waiting on any line, really. But I also agree with you completely that it's the crystal meth. It's the one that I am absolutely most addicted to. It's the one that I take breaks from. It's the one that I like feel like I need to get clean from occasionally. I don't feel like that about Instagram. Like Instagram, I see like home decor tips and like fashion and like some Taylor Swift news. I don't feel like I'm getting, you know, the negative side of the world on Instagram.
Yeah, Instagram is how I keep up with Taylor too. That's my my Tay-Tay sort.
Who among us, you know?
Right. Well, it is funny. I don't do TikTok. I have a former student that I call my contributing TikTok editor because she sends me TikToks that I post on the blog from time to time. But I don't want the app on my phone because God knows what it's doing to me.
Right.
And I really don't want to spend any more time on the internet or on any screen. I'm kind of trying to, I mean, for me to talk about reducing my internet exposure is kind of a joke. But you know.
But I hear that, you know, the whole, what is it called? The new Apple glasses.
Oh yeah,
thing.
The ProVision. Yeah, no.
Like that looks like a nightmare to me. Why would I want that? And you know, and the thinking that people are like, oh, when I say that, like, oh, you know, in a few years, you'll see. You're going to want that. I'm like, I am never going to want that.
It was the Foresight Vision Conference. It was in the 90s. It was probably like 97, 98. Jaron Lanier, who was one of the original VR pioneers, had his display with the same kind of goggles. And you could look at it and a shark would swim by you and stuff. And everybody was like, this is going to be the next big thing in 2 or 3 years. And I was on it and I was like, you know, this just seems really lame to me. I mean, you know, I know they have those 3D movies in the 50s where you wore the glasses, and that's kind of what it seems like to me. It's like a gimmick that, I mean, I can see how for some stuff, a truly immersive experience would really be worth it, but not that much. And I'm not going to be the first one to adopt it because I honestly am trying to spend more time outdoors.
Yeah.
And actually looking at the real world, not outdoors wearing goggles.
Right. I think that's the way to go, really.
We're going to take a quick break and be right back on The Carol Markowitz Show.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snag a Job is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position: warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snag a Job's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly, with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text SNAG to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
So you're, a very well-known law professor. You're the father of many, many writer children on the internet, the blog father.
That's my favorite thing, is that I have all these blog children out there.
You do. They're like scattered through the world. Do you feel like you've made it?
Made it. My ambitions were never super huge. So yeah, I guess so.
And you have a beautiful wife. I have to also say, Helen is like, every time you post a picture of her, I'm like, I don't know, she's brilliant too, but she is stunning. Like, she is literally one of the most beautiful women I've ever seen.
She's very beautiful. And we have a lovely daughter who is now married. We have a lovely, delightful son-in-law who's a great guy. So yeah, in that sense, I've definitely made it. And career-wise, I'm by law professor standards, I'm successful, and that's all I really ever aim for. So, not quite true. When I was in college, I wanted to be a pundit and write newspaper columns, and I do that. So, yeah.
That's what you wanted to do? Wow.
Yeah.
If that wasn't your career, if you weren't a law professor and you weren't a pundit, what would be plan B?
I'd probably be a lawyer. I like practicing law fine.
Right.
I don't miss it except on payday, but, honestly, I didn't mind practicing law at all. I like what I do now a lot better. Mm-hmm. But there's some people who become law professors because they hate practicing law. And I didn't. It was interesting. I liked my clients for the most part.
What kind of law did you practice?
So I was in D.C. and we had what was called a Washington policy practice, which basically means lobbying and administrative law. And I did work telecommunications and aerospace mostly, a little bit of food and drug sometimes. Represented McDonald's on a few things.
Wow.
It was fine. I liked it fine. And, I could have stayed and done that. And the nice thing about the firm I work at is the DC office had a big international trade practice. They had economists on staff. They actually encouraged people to write and publish. And that's kind of how I started writing law review articles and books even before I became a law professor.
How long have you been in Tennessee?
30 plus years now.
Oh, wow. So how have the last few years of all the new people moving in, how has that been?
Mostly great. I was really concerned that it was going to be like Colorado or something and bring in a bunch of people who turned the state blue. And the local Democrats still hope for that. But everybody we meet who's moving here is in some ways, I think, more conservative than people here are, or at least more aware. They've been in a state that went down.
Right.
Whereas people here, I think, are kind of complacent. So I've noticed that some of them are becoming more politically active than most of the locals.
Interesting. Yeah, I think that the last few years that this recent migration has been, you know, people with a purpose moving. It's like nobody's moving to Florida now for the low taxes or the weather. I mean, look, those are all side benefits, obviously, but it's for a reason. You're wanting something different. You're wanting something better. And I think Tennessee and Florida and Texas are obviously at the forefront of that. I see the same thing. I don't think that this is a blue migration. Of course, the concern is that once this wave of people comes in and kind of settles down, that the next wave will be like, wait, they've built something really good there. Let's go there and change it. And
ruin it. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. But well,
what I think somebody said, which was a good observation, is the people who move from a blue state to a red state because their employer moves typically bring their blue state attitudes with them. Mm-hmm. The people who pick up stakes and do it themselves typically don't. And so I think that's right. The one thing I do think sort of funny is, you know, and it's kind of a good size, everybody who moves here immediately like learns to shoot if they don't already know how.
Oh, so yeah. That's definitely true for us. We, you know, had never shot a gun or even touched a gun or anything. And now we enjoy the shooting very, very much. It's a benefit. It's like, why wouldn't you take advantage of your rights? And why wouldn't you learn how to do something like that when you can? Yeah, I love it.
Now, do you know Hadass Levy, who's down there in your neck of the woods? She does a lot of tactical training for women.
I know the name. I feel like somebody might have mentioned her to me. Maybe I'll look her up after this. But yeah.
You should maybe interview her. I'll bet she'd be a good interview.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll have her on. So one of the things we talk about on this show is, you know, cultural problems and societal problems. And so what's your take on what our biggest cultural problem is and whether it's solvable?
The biggest cultural problem we face is that the people running our society, the ruling class, if you want to call them that, don't like the society or the people they rule very much. And that's true throughout most of the West. It's certainly true in the United States and Canada and the UK and in most of Europe, especially, but not exclusively, in the Anglophone countries, which seem to have the worst dose of it for some reason. And, you know, you can't be a very good ruling class of a country you don't like.
Yeah.
And it's much more divisive. I mean, if you look at things like the collapse in military recruitment now, the collapse in military recruitment comes because the pool of potential recruits looks at the people running things and says, I can't trust these people.
Right.
You know, they'd screw me over in a heartbeat, not even for their personal gain, just to look good for their friends for 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. And why should I go and take a bullet for that? And I don't blame them. I mean, I've got a nephew who's in the Army now and it's been good for him, but you know, he'll be out in a year and he has no intention to stay. And honestly, it's been good for him in a lot of ways, but not because they've treated him especially well, if that makes sense. There's all these stories of, you know, you go to a base and there's no food and no toilet paper. And I mean, you know, it's just like they're not spending all that money on taking care of their people.
Right. So how do we solve that? What's the solution?
I don't know. I mean, you know,
I feel like you have to know. You're the blog father.
Well, I don't know. Sometimes I get angry. I'm just like, let the purges begin. But, you know, you really sweeping out your ruling class and sweeping in a new one is something that never works very well and usually is worse. The good news about our ruling class, honestly, is because they're very shallow and driven by fads, if we could just get a fad that involved them being patriotic and trying to do a good job, they'd do it. So I think that's got to be where we go.
Yeah. It's wild to me that like American flags have become right wing. I try to imagine the opposite. Like, oh, the left wing has now decided that every house that is a left wing person, they would put an American flag outside. And would I be like, oh, well, that I'm not putting the American flag outside because that's a left wing thing. I would never surrender it. I would never let them just have it. And the idea of that patriotism has become something only one side of the political aisle is into is, it's just really crazy to me, especially again, looking back at those early blog days, it was sort of, everybody realized that America was worth fighting for and worth salvaging. And those post 9/11 days were really something.
Yeah. You saw American flags everywhere there for a while.
And, yeah. And then not.
Yeah. Going to fads again, mm-hmm. You see rainbow flags everywhere now. I was at a political luncheon, and we're coming out in sort of a hipster area of Knoxville, and some flower shop with a huge rainbow flag that said, "Hate does not abide here." And my wife was like, "I bet if I went in there and mentioned Donald Trump or something, there'd be plenty of hate that would abide there." So, you know, it was, right. But that's a fad.
Yeah.
We've seen those "in this house" signs in people's yards and stuff. And so, but it literally is a fad, mostly shallowly held by shallow people. So the good news for us is it's not like you have to change the mind of the Waffen SS or something like that. Mm-hmm. Most of these people don't even know why they believe what they believe half the time. It's just because that's what has status in their community at the moment.
Right.
So that's
it just
the good
concerns
news.
Me that if we do have another tragedy, if we do have something bad happen, I can't see us uniting in quite the same ways. COVID was sort of the great example of that. We completely did not unite. You know, my neighbors turned each other in for having too many people over.
COVID was a good example of how bad our ruling class is, and how much of what went on during COVID seemed to be mostly just sort of kicking around the public because you could, the privilege of feeling like a powerful big shot. And of course, the emails and stuff that have come out since that show that the people who were telling us to follow the science, even the scientists didn't believe it themselves, mm-hmm. Indicate that it was just a shocking breach of faith with the public. And you can't have a cohesive, united, patriotic country where the leadership has broken faith with the public and the public knows it. And that's definitely where we are right now.
Yeah.
How's that for cheerful?
Yeah, that's not very optimistic, Glenn. I was hoping for more, something more to go on.
I mean, honestly, there's a school of thought in which you say everything's really mm-hmm. terrible now and the government is much more illegitimate and dishonest. If you actually look at the history of, say, the 50s and the 60s, it's not at all clear that's true. Mm-hmm. But the difference is the public didn't know it.
Right.
So the country felt more united and more patriotic because people just didn't know what was being done to them mm-hmm. in a lot of ways. Now they do. And, I'm in favor of that. I like transparency.
Sure.
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's better off if everybody's fooled. But whatever, word has gotten out, and all the efforts to censor things and keep it in only make it look worse. I think people are just going to have to do I hate to just say, the solution is for the people running things to do a better job. Mm-hmm. But we do actually really need that.
Right. So societally, we might be in trouble. But a question that I ask all of my guests is, end here with your best tip for my listeners on how they can improve their individual lives.
Oh, well, that's actually easier. It's amazing. Actually, there's a very funny little video that's bouncing around on social media, and some of you may have seen it, where this woman is saying, "I just feel sort of down now. I really don't know why." And her friend says, "Well, are you getting enough sleep? No. Have you exercised? No. Have you been outside? No." It's just like, and I mean, honestly, do all that stuff and you'll feel a lot better. Exercise, get outside, stay away from the computer and the news.
Eat and drink. Part of her thing was like, did you eat today? Did you drink enough water?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, all of that honestly makes an amazing difference. I mean, people talk about how I seem pretty cheerful. And I mean,
you
I'm
do.
Not always cheerful, but I do. And part of the reason is I lift weights and I do yoga several times a week and I eat a reasonably healthy diet and I get out and move around and, I read a novel or two every week and that keeps me pretty cheerful. Although I'm reading Kurt Schlichter's new novel, The Attack, which is basically like the October 7th attacks, if they happened on a big scale in the United States. That's not super cheerful.
I'm planning to read that next. It's on my list.
It's depressingly realistic and believable. And in fact, I was at this political luncheon and the Speaker of the House was there and there was just a lot of security around it. And I was really like, good.
Well, thank you so much for coming on, Glenn. This has been great. Really love talking
to you. Thanks for having me.
Love reliving the blogger days. Thanks so much for joining us on The Carol Markowitz Show. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and every body. The weather is getting warmer and it's time to swap my winter layers for fun, vibrant, and cool clothing. With so many fun things happening this spring, like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, it's hard to find great looking clothes that fit you just right. That's why I love JCPenney. JCPenney has so many stylish and comfortable options for so many different body types. I've been blown away by their selection and everything hugs my body in all the right spots. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with style that gets you. Something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
With every CBD product claiming to do something different, it's nearly impossible to decide what's best for you. Lazarus Naturals pioneered the farm-to-front-door model of transparency where they handle each step of the production process to ensure quality, potency, and consistency. Scannable labels allow you to see the test results of your hemp batch so you can be confident in the safety and quality. Visit LazarusNaturals.com today. Lazarus Naturals, committed to improving your life as well as the world around you. Not available in Idaho, Iowa, or South Dakota.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape begins a journey to fight for a future for apes and humans alike. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.